This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, I got a couple social media things going on here I got to ask about. I'm going to bring Josh in here. Sal Capaccio with you, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll get that right out of the way this morning. Good morning to you. It is a Wednesday, February 12th. Did you see the video? I'm just watching this video now of Danny Hurley at following beating Creighton last night.
Yeah.
Was it last night?
Right? Yeah, this was last night. It's so funny. Danny Hurley, what
awesome.
A character, right? Like,
I mean, Danny Hurley, did they win? They won the game, right? Excuse me. They won the game, I believe, right? I got to check and make sure.
They did. 70-66 okay. Over Creighton.
Okay, 70-66. They win the game. So he's getting harassed as he walked off the court. You know, people just shouting things at him. That's what fans do. They yell at players and coaches of the other team, and you suck, and we'll go home. Whatever they're saying, I don't know. Can hardly even hear what they're saying on there. But Danny Hurley is walking off the court, and he's going through into the tunnel, and he starts shouting back at the fans, and he has the best response, two rings, right? And it's like, I mean, what else can you, right? I mean, dude, he's the back-to-back champ, and he just beat you in your building, and you're giving him crap. Like, that's the best response. He doesn't have to say anything else. But then the funniest part is, he looks at a guy. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He looks at a guy and calls him baldy.
That's the best part.
Danny Hurley is bald.
Right, right. But then you can like faintly hear like two rings, baldy, and it's like, wait, did he just, is he going after a guy that's bald while he is also bald? Like,
right. That's like me calling someone baldy.
Right.
Can you imagine? Capaccio, you suck. Your opinions are terrible on the air. Shut up, baldy. Like, what? That's me. Oh, my God. It's great. Danny Hurley. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he is bald. You think he's bald, right? He's not. He does have, like the hair, like this morning I had when I shaved it. I shaved my head. He's got that going on. But you'd call him bald, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, because every once in a while, he'll shave that off and be bald. And
right.
Besides, his hair is basically white. Like, when it's short enough, it doesn't look like he has hair there. Like, I consider him bald.
Yeah, me too. So he calls someone bald. That's amazing. I love it. What a clip. Just saw this a little while ago. Did you see the one he did, like, a couple of weeks ago? He said to an official, I'm the best coach in the bleeping sport. Like, the official was saying something to him or whatever. He was getting on him, and he didn't think he was getting respected by the official. And he says to the official, I'm the best coach in the blanking sport. Do you see that one?
No, that's a bit too far, I think. I mean, saying to a fan, look at my two rings, like, that's one thing. But, like, that's a bit too...
I mean, but this is him. This is him. This is what. This is partly what makes Danny Hurley Danny Hurley, though.
Right, right,
right. And that family. And you don't have to like the Hurleys. And Bobby did a great job when he was here at UB, and now he's at Arizona State, and it's going okay here and there, not the greatest. And but Danny, you know, I mean, he's won two championships, and some people just don't like the family, and without the whole, you know, where Bobby played at Duke and all that stuff. I mean, just the style and the family and the coaching, and some people love it. I just think it. I think it's great entertainment. And he's right. He's great. He's done an amazing job. We are going to talk about the college sports scene today a bit with our buddy Brent Axe. Brent's going to join me at the bottom of the hour. And I did not book Brent to necessarily talk about Syracuse athletics, but you know we do when he's on because that's what he covers. And he's at Syracuse.com. And last night, I mean, Syracuse basketball goes to Miami, the worst team in the ACC, Miami. They're like 1-11. And they, or whatever their freaking record was, I don't even remember. But, and Syracuse loses. And it's just so, I'm a hardcore, really lifelong, not just because I went to school there, but like even before that, big time Syracuse basketball fan. And it hurts me, it pains me to see how bad they are in basketball. Like, it just sucks, you know? And I don't know if there's any climbing out of it because of, yes, this nice recruiting class coming in. Who cares? Like, I used to really follow recruiting for Syracuse basketball, and I do somewhat now still because of Kion Anthony coming next year, Carmelo Anthony. But I think this is true for a lot of people in college sports. If you're, this is like, I think I represent a lot of college sports fans out there when I say this. Like, it's just so tough to follow like the way you used to because of the changing landscape. And Syracuse football's done it better, and Fran Brown came in, and look where they are. But even then, like, who's the quarterback? Who's the quarterback next year? Oh, yeah, you have this great recruit. Donnie Freeman comes into Syracuse. Where is he next year? Just going to leave, I'm sure. It's crazy. It's the wild, wild west. It's, you know, you could transfer any time, any year, for any reason. Don't like what your situation is. Go somewhere else. Oh, we're going to pay you a lot of money in NIL. And it's just a wild, total shift in the landscape. And I want to ask Brent what it's like covering, you know, college sports now. And yes, we will touch on why Syracuse basketball is so bad. Is just because maybe Adrian Autry isn't a good coach? Is it because of NIL money? Is it what's going on? And we'll do that. But I wanted to talk to him about the changing college sports landscape. On the heels, by the way, yesterday, really congratulations. The report came yesterday. Pete Lembo, contract extension with UB football, and haven't reached out to anybody at UB yet. We'd like to get somebody. We'll talk with Pete again down the road. Had him on the show a couple of times, but really, Pete Thamel was on it yesterday. New contract, adds a year to his deal, gives him a raise, includes a significant increase in resources for assistant coaches and staff. They went 9-4 this season, went to the Bahamas Bowl. They won the Bahamas Bowl. He's done an amazing job. And I think that it is interesting to see, like, some of these coaches can survive and do this, whether it's mid-major programs or it's bigger programs. Look at Danny Hurley, right? I mean, yes. And then I think some of these programs who you traditionally know to be really good have been really tough for them to find their footing and how to do this. So I do want to talk with Brent about that. But that's part of the program today. That's at 10:30 a.m. At 11 o'clock, we'll have Paul Hamilton. The Four Nations face-off begins tonight. Who's playing tonight? Canada and Sweden, is it? Is that the schedule tonight?
Yeah, at 8 o'clock.
Josh, 8 o'clock, right? I'm super jacked up for this. And I'm partly jacked up because I think the talent is amazing to watch. But I think I'm just super curious what it looks like, aren't you? Like, how... Remember yesterday I asked Carlo Koliakovo, who joined us yesterday on the program, I said, like, how intense will this be? And he said, that is the question, right? And that's what I'm really interested in, Josh. Like, how intense? Because these guys, I would say, to me, soccer and hockey, like, those two sports come to mind right away when you talk about playing for country and playing for pride throughout, you know, Olympics and history, the last, you know, whatever amount of years and decades. Soccer and hockey always seem like those two sports where it's really kind of matters. And basketball is getting there too now because it's such a global sport, but really those two sports. And when these guys put on a uniform for Canada, for Team Canada, for Team Sweden and Finland and USA, it means something to them. They're also in the middle of their season and trying to win Stanley Cups. And I'm super interesting. And it's interested in what this looks like, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I'm super excited to see the intensity level. I think it's going to be even more than what we expect. I mean, if the Rasmus Dahlin that showed up in Nashville last weekend for the Sabres shows up for this tournament, Sweden is going to really be a problem, I think. I don't think people are giving them enough credit. But another thing that I think is going to be an interesting issue for teams to deal with is the Tkachuk brothers being on the same team and both just kind of being who they are. I mean, they're going to be physical. They're going to be in your face. I mean, I'm excited to see those two go up against that, you know, whatever you want to call it, five-headed monster of a power play unit in Canada. I mean, the USA-Canada game in Montreal on Saturday is going to be the game of the year.
Yes.
Regardless of what happens the rest of the NHL season, that will be the hockey game of the year because there's going to be so much going on in that game with the skill level on Canada, just the general rivalry of the two countries in terms of, you know, where they are with hockey. I mean, Canada hasn't won a cup since 1993, so here we are. You know, like it's there's a lot to be had there, and I'm so excited for all the different storylines.
Yeah, we're gonna. You know what's? I keep thinking about this though, Josh, which is you would really hate if they're gonna go hard, right? They're gonna go intense. I think it's gonna mean a lot. But man, you just can't have somebody get injured in a situation like this on a team that's trying to get where they're trying to go. Right? That's what I have in the back of my head. I hate thinking like that. I don't want to be negative. But you know, like there's gonna be a couple injuries that happen. It happens all the time in any sport and competitively. There's gonna be a couple guys coming out of this with, you know, nicks and bumps and bruises, and hopefully that's all. But if there's some sort of major injury to a really key player, I don't know if we'll see anything like this again, to be quite honest with you. Like that is going to be, that would be a huge, major, unfortunate talking point, regardless of how good the competition and the games are.
Yeah, that's the one tough thing is it's like when you look, like you brought up soccer, right? Like when the World Cup happens, they have, like the teams have done this for years. So they have their schedules kind of built around it, and it only lasts for a few weeks, but it's in the middle of their off season. Whereas with the NHL, you don't know when your season's going to end sometimes. So like you could be done in April or you could be done in July. Like there's so much variance there where you can't say, oh, well, why don't they just do this in, you know, the end of July, early August? Well, that some teams just finished playing and then you're getting ready for training camp. So it's like, I don't know if there's ever like a good time to do this, which is the hardest part because they're so good. Like, this is one of my favorite things. Like, and I wish they could do it more often, but that's the hardest thing is they can't because you have to kind of, you know, keep the players in mind and keep your regular season in mind. So it's tough, but I do hope there's a way they can maybe figure this out eventually. Cause it is a huge draw for people. I mean, this is going to draw a lot of attention, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a fun watch. It starts tonight. Starts off in Montreal, then they go to TD Garden, I think, next week, right? When they start the, they have their other games next week, and then the Ultimate Championship, I believe, as well. So we'll talk about that today with Paul Hamilton at 11 a.m. Couple football items to get to today. Later today, I'm going to rank 1 through 7 the new head coach hires in the NFL, not according to how successful I think they'll be. Totally different. According to how well I think the team did on what they needed. Now, I could say, oh my God, they really needed this, and that's what they hired. That's a great hire for them for what they needed. Doesn't mean it's going to work. You have so many factors at play because who's your quarterback? Is your owner a meddling owner? Can you get out of the way of that? But for what the team needed, they got that particular person. And there's some teams that needed certain things that got it. There's some teams that needed certain things that didn't get it. So I'll rank those 1 through 7. 7 new head coaches on the heels of yesterday it being officially announced that Kellen Moore was hired by the New Orleans Saints. By the way, did you see the story, Josh, of possibly Dan Orlovsky maybe adding to the Saints coach, going to the Saints coaching staff?
Really?
That is a rumor.
Okay, because I know his contract at ESPN's up, but
We think that's the case because he did. You may have read that. Maybe you're right. I don't know. There's been some talk about that, but I do know this. He went on ESPN the other day, and when he signed off, he made it sound like he might not be back on ESPN.
Yeah, that was like the way he signed off of First Take the other day. It sounded kind of like, because he said he won't be back on TV for a while. So,
but I will say, though, that the people who do those football shows, Josh, they sometimes take months off because they're grind during football season. So sometimes, when you say, hey, I'm not going to be on TV for a while, I mean, like, I'll see you at the draft. Like, sometimes that could be the case.
Right.
But in this case, it seemed like he was more so kind of reflecting, you know, on his time. And then there was a story that came out that I read that said there's some speculation that he could join the Saints coaching staff because him and Kellen Moore apparently are very tight.
I mean, that'd be interesting. I don't really know what he would spring, though. Like, is he does have a lot of good, and like he has great analysis when he's on these shows. Like, I love watching him break down the all 22s and stuff like that. But has he ever coached before? I mean, is this going to be his
first? No, the question would be for me is, what is the role? Like, are you actually running a position group?
Right.
Are you in the background breaking down film? Like, that all that would have to be decided. Plus, I just don't think it's a great move. However, it's awesome if that's what he wants to do, and he could always go back to TV. But we'll see if that's the case. But I just thought that was interesting with the Kellen Moore hiring in New Orleans. And then, of course, we have James Cook. So James Cook, let me just kind of set this up, and you looked into it a little bit. I asked because I try to keep up with the social media stuff that's going on, and in this day and age, a lot of the players, that's how they communicate. What apparently happened was, and did happen, on an Instagram live story, is that what it is?
Yes.
There was, so, I don't know who was running the story. You could tell me and fill in the blanks on what James Cook did or wrote.
Well, so I don't really know if there's like a moderator or anything because it is his account, right? Like,
okay.
He went live on his account. So basically, he is just kind of sitting in there, and it's like, if it's like when we live stream our shows on YouTube now, right? Like, it people can come in and comment at him and listen to what he's talking about or watch what he's doing or whatever. Some people do this for video games. Some people do it when they're just hanging out. Like, a lot of media personalities, celebrities, whatever, do this sort of thing. In this feature, though, a lot like how you can pin a tweet on Twitter where it'll be at the top of your Twitter feed, you can pin comments. You can pin certain things that you want people to see right when they come in. It'll be the most recent comment, no matter when it was commented. In this case, he pinned his own comment that said 15 mil a year. And I didn't watch the live, so I don't know what he was talking about in it, but the screenshot that I'm seeing is a black screen. So it could have just been him, you know, talking to people or just hanging out or whatever. But the big thing was the fact that he pinned a comment that said 15 mil a year, and it was his own comment. So, kind of interesting there.
First of all, if you asked me any player on the Bills who would be going doing a live Instagram story, I would tell you that James Cook would be way down the list. Does he do a lot of these? Does he go live on Instagram a lot?
I'm not really sure. I don't get the notifications when he goes. I follow him on Instagram, but I don't get the notifications when he goes live. So,
right.
Because you can do that.
Maybe
too.
He
you
does like, this a lot, but he is not the personality I would think would be on Instagram live a lot.
No, yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a super quiet guy. So I if you said to me, hey, rank the Bills players who would be going on Instagram live, like, all right, well, Von Miller's going to do that. He's his own podcast and, you know, things like that. Deion Dawkins. I would not be selecting James Cook. So I'm just wondering from that aspect of it, which is interesting. So 15 mil. Okay. So I know the guys talked a little bit about this today. Can we, here's what I want to do. I want to throw this out because we have Brent Axe coming up at the bottom of the hour. Let's do this now. I have open phone lines. So if you want to call up and get in on this, you are more than welcome. And I can take your phone calls here for the next 10, 15 minutes. 803-0550 is the number to call. How would you approach James Cook's pending possible contract? Because he is under contract with the Bills for one more year, by the way. Like, this is not something, just so everybody's aware, this is not something like he's going to be a free agent in March in next month. He is under contract for $5.1 million heading into 2025. That is the last year of his contract. After that, if he plays out this contract, he is a unrestricted free agent at the end of next season. So the Bills, though, because he's played 3 years, are allowed now to give him a contract extension. You have to wait 3 years. That's happened. How would you approach James Cook's pending contractual status? The Bills have had, give me a call, 803-0550. I'd like to hear from you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show today. The Bills have had this philosophy of running backs and how to treat them and how to pay them. And I think it's generally pretty much worked. Like, they do not overpay for running backs. It is not a position you should overpay for in the NFL. You pay, when you have a great quarterback, you pay him. Like a Josh Allen, a Joe Burrow, a Patrick Mahomes, and whatever. When you have a great left tackle, you pay him. Like a Deion Dawkins gets his contract extension. When you have a great edge rusher, you pay him. Like, these are a corner. There are certain positions you pay when you have someone great. You don't pay running backs. Because I think in the NFL, you can get by with having a different level of replacement versus a quarterback or a corner or a left tackle or an edge rusher. However, this is the type of running back that kind of might test that theory because he was so good the last 2 years, right? So what is $15 million a year? By the way, only one running back in the NFL right now, according to overthecap.com, has an annual average contract of over $15 million a year. That's Christian McCaffrey at $19 million. After that, it's Jonathan Taylor at 14, Saquon at 12.5, Alvin Kamara at 12.5, Josh Jacobs at 12. That's it. Like, that would be the second highest in the league if you go to 15. I don't think I'm willing to do that. As great as James Cook has been for me and my organization, I wouldn't do that. In fact, I think I would say let him play it out in franchise tag. It might be actually less next year than that. So we'll get to your phone calls. In fact, I think Angelo has a question about that. Go ahead, Angelo. What's your question, buddy?
Yeah, how you doing? Hi, Sal.
Good. Thanks.
I was just saying, can't they franchise tag him, or is it just has to go through the process of his contract? And I don't think he's worth 15, but, I mean, they restructure him or what?
Let me see the franchise tag numbers from last year. Give me 1 second. I'm going to look this up. Here we go. This year, the projected franchise tag number, if someone's going to franchise tag a running back this year, it's only going to be at 13.6. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to go up a little bit. It might be right around 15 next year. They could just do that. You could go, if you went 1 year, 15 mil to try and work it out, that would be better than signing him maybe to an average annual value of $15 million. I don't know. So how it would work, the mechanics of it, Angelo, to answer your question is you would have to let him play out this year, and then if there's no contract extension, you put the franchise tag on him next year before free agency begins. That would be probably about $15 million, but that also gives you time to work out a new deal, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay. All right. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Let's go to Mike in Holland. Hi, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? I was just curious.
Good,
do you
thanks.
Think this is Cook's cryptic way of saying he's going to hold out? We don't pay him?
Nope, nobody holds out anymore. If you hold out, it's way too pricey. You just don't get holdouts anymore. It's $40,000 a day or something like that. It's just nobody holds out anymore. So he could try that. But, I mean, I guess maybe you do have an example of here or there a guy has done it, but I just can't see that happening in this situation.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I guess you could say, well, those Sal guys have held out. That's right. I mean, heck, look at who's the guy that did it last year? Hassan Reddick, right? Hassan Reddick held out. He didn't care. He just kept getting fines. I just don't see that happening. It's possible, not to totally dismiss what you're asking right there to the caller. Not totally dismissing. I just can't see it here because players just don't do that anymore. It's just too cost prohibitive to actually hold out. The CBA prevented that. That was one of the really good things they did about the last CBA. They're like, yeah, you're not holding out anymore if you're under contract. Like, if you're not under contract as a draft pick that, you know, hasn't signed yet, you're not getting fined because you're not under contract. You're not, you know, but in that case, there's no reason to hold out anyway because you're getting a structured contract, something that's predetermined based on the formula of draft picks. So I wouldn't say that. I mean, I guess he could play hardball. He might hold out if you want to talk about, like, not training camp, but like OTAs. Sure. I wonder if we see James Cook at OTAs. That could be something that maybe we have a storyline. There it is. I mean, thinking about it now, it probably very much is going to be a storyline. Voluntary workouts, OTAs. Is James Cook there? You also have the issue of four other players. Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard, Christian Benford, and Khalil Shakir. They're all in the same boat. All of them. Like, they're all going into the final year of their contract, and you can't pay everybody. So I just, you know, wonder where this goes. Let's go to TJ in West Seneca. Hi, TJ.
Hey, Sal, it's CJ, but that's fine. A quick question. I just want to ask you, because Bean came here, what, in 2017? He's been the GM. Mm-hmm. The Bills haven't used the tag in the 7 years he's been here. Is that more of like a philosophical thing where they don't want to have to pay like the top five average, whatever it is, for the franchise tag for players?
It's or
is
a good
it
question.
They don't want to do it for, yeah. Or is it because they obviously.
My guess is that. It is philosophical because let me explain too. What happens is, if you use the franchise tag, you immediately tie up all of that money and you can't, now that's right on your cap. Bam. It just goes on your cap and you can't do anything. I think Bean's philosophy has been, I'd rather not do that. I'd rather be able to sign something else to give me more flexibility, because if you sign a deal that's even 2 years, you can push money the second year, you have more flexibility. So I do think it's probably something philosophical. They also haven't gotten to a point where they've really had anybody that's kind of worth that kind of money. I mean, I guess Tremaine Edmonds would have been somebody you thought about, but they never would do it that. And then he got paid even more so on the open market, but hasn't been anybody like that to use it on, I guess. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And then the one thing, too, is that they always talk about culture. And obviously the culture in their locker room is probably one of, if not the best in the league. But if you're a franchise that's known for tagging players all the time, you know, yeah, free agents probably don't want to go there because they'd rather want to get a full contract as opposed to having to play on a one-year deal. So they probably do that for, you know, the sake of player retention, too, where they don't want to have people think that they have to do that all the time to keep their top talent. So,
yeah, players notice that stuff. They definitely do, CJ. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We'll take a timeout. Brent Axe, Syracuse.com, is going to join me after this timeout. The changing landscape of the college sports scene and trying to keep up with it and covering it. And I mean, I just, as a fan, it's just too tough for me. What's it like even covering and knowing what's going on? And what is going on? And why is Syracuse basketball just in such a free fall and downfall, as opposed to the football team being able to figure it out, I guess. We'll talk about all of that, but really the college sports scene in general. Brent Axe coming up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Yeah, the buy-in has been tremendous. It has been a pleasure to work with these guys. I can count the number of practices since we got here on one hand that I haven't been totally excited about the effort and the chemistry that's building out there. So I do believe these guys love what they do. They're invested. They're buying into the culture. They're practicing hard. I think that'll translate to playing hard. Now the key is, how quickly can we come together and put a product out there on the field to look as if we've been together for a few years and not just a few months?
So that's UB Bulls football head coach Pete Lembo. That was last year when he was hired, and he had come from South Carolina. He had been a coach before in the MAC, and people were wondering, okay, you know, what's he bring? New college sports landscape, how's he going to adjust? And it's been great. He's done a great job. Pete Lembo and the Bulls at UB have apparently reached an agreement on a new contract extension, according to Pete Thamel, and good for him. They went 9-4. They went to the Bahamas Bowl last year, and I think Pete Lembo's done a great job of navigating this college sports landscape, and you got a good coach here at the University of Buffalo, but it's always changing, and that's why I wanted to reach out to my buddy Brent Axe, Syracuse.com. Joins me right now on the West Her Hotline to talk about the changing landscape of college sports and covering it. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Sally, how we doing?
I'm doing great, man. Always good to catch up with you. You know, I did not book you specifically to talk about, you know, Syracuse, what they would do last night. But after last night's performance, I mean, how can we not start with what the hell is going on with Syracuse basketball? Because I am probably one of many who would just say the word apathy is very much going on here, where I used to love watching this team, following everything about this team on a daily basis. Couldn't wait for them to play again. And it's just so different now, Brent. It just really sucks.
Sal, that's the biggest problem they face. You took the words right out of my mouth. People are not passionate. They're not angry. You can't get angry about sports, like sports anger, right? But people don't care anymore. I'm hearing from a number of people, and you just reiterated it, that they're like, oh, did they lose last night? I didn't watch the game. Or what's going on? Like, they're just checking out. There's just so many other options these days. And even fans that kind of qualify themselves as diehards or longtime fans or whatever the case may be, there's just not a draw to watch this team. And then they go out last night and you lose to – look, it's one thing to lose to Duke by 30, but you go out and you lose to the last place team in the ACC that had won a single – game in the league. They've got an interim coach. Miami's been a mess this year. They got a couple of great players, don't get me wrong. Matthew Cleveland's going to play in the NBA, and they've got some talent. But that's the rock bottom loss in the Autry era. And this is somebody who's had 16 double-digit losses in his time at Syracuse, and there's been some real head-scratchers this year and in his tenure, but man, to just go out there and not play defense at all and fall on your face to the team and at the bottom of the league. This is what's happening now, Sal. People aren't really, I mean, there's certainly a faction out there that is passionate, and I hear from them daily, but it's that's the bigger concern here is people that are just checking out and being like, okay, when's spring football start? Or, you know, the lacrosse team is pretty good, or what's on Netflix, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Well, let me get to then the core of the issue. Is it Red Autry? Is it NIL money? Is it just not the right players? Where? What are you hearing? What are you seeing when you evaluate all this?
I still don't know what Syracuse basketball is under Red Autry, and he has been the coach here for two seasons. I still see a lot of the same problems on the court at the end of the Boeheim era. I don't know what his identity is. He has this hashtag, this branding thing called the Orange Standard. I have no idea what that is. Nobody does. This team plays poor defense. They constantly go under screens. I don't know what the offense is. It's supposedly an offense where everybody moves the ball and we move fast. You say all you want about what you liked and didn't like about the Jim Boeheim era and at the end when it was fading. Like, you knew who he was and you knew what they were, right? They had an identity. This team still does not have an identity. So that's a problem. Syracuse misfired in the portal big time. Now, Eddie Lampkin, I think, has been as good as you can get at center on the offensive end. He certainly has his flaws. You got to take the good with the bad with Lampkin. And they paid about $500,000 for him. And he's a serviceable center. The other point, like Jaquan Carlos, is not a point guard at this level. And the other players they brought in the portal are just kind of, you know, serviceable players, but not ACC level guys. So now, Sal, you got to go out next year and reload in the portal. And you have Kion Anthony coming in, who is Carmelo's son, as most of you know, who's a good offensive player. But the fear has to be, is he getting overrated a bit because of what his last name is? Sadiq White comes in, who's a top 40 prospect, who's, think of Hakeem Warrick. He is a Hakeem Warrick, long, athletic, can explode to the basket, pretty good defender, but they're still freshmen. So now you've got to go convince people that have money to give Syracuse that money to go find players in the portal. Now, when the House settlement goes through, and it's expected to, now teams and programs are going to be given a budget of $20 million to spend. But you got to remember, that's on every program. So how much of that do you allocate to football, basketball, and the other sports down the line? Knowing that Syracuse is going to have to reasonably spend, boy, $4 to $6 million at least on good talent in the portal for college basketball. They did hire a general manager, which is just kind of standard these days in college sports. So they're doing all the right things. It's just, do you have the coach in place that can coach this talent, can identify the talent, and can reload in a season where, Sal, they're going to miss the tournament for the fourth straight year? That's an eternity by Syracuse standards. So you're putting so much pressure on next year to fix this whole thing.
Okay, so I wonder if it's too, if it's right to pull the plug on Adrian Autry. I hate saying that. Love Red. Went to school while Red was there. But the signs are there, right? That I don't know if he is the right man for the job. People say, but you got this great recruiting class coming in next year. It doesn't matter to me because you can replenish in recruiting now because of the way it's all set up, right? I mean, this is the quandary that someone like me turns in my stomach and in my head about all this stuff, to be honest with you, Brent.
These are all fair questions. And do you go all in on a season next year because you're bringing in Carmelo Anthony's kid? And that's the key. Right. Like, is Kion Anthony committed to Adrian Autry or is he committed to Syracuse? So what if, and Carmelo has said, Sal, that he's going to be around the program more. And look, you can't ask Carmelo to give you more money. He donated right. A huge sum of money for the practice facility. He's literally giving you his firstborn child. Like, what more can you ask Carmelo Anthony to do? But you cannot let one recruit or two recruits or a class coming in basically be the reason you bring a coach back. You have got to take a hard look at this if you're John Wildhack. And the problem with that is, Sal, and I'm not saying this is not a reason to do it, but from what I understand, Autry's got a 5-year contract. So if you're going to make that move, you got to buy out 2 years of his deal. Syracuse mm-hmm. doesn't do that. Syracuse, mm-hmm. to my knowledge, there might be one or two examples I'm not thinking of here, but when they fire coaches, it's usually there's a year left on their deal. Well, Jim Boeheim had a year left on his deal. Dino Babers had a year left on his deal. Scott Schaefer, same deal. When they've made head coaching changes, they're not paying guys out for 2 years not to coach. So you got to consider that, but we're in a different era now where everything is accelerated and it might lose more than you gain by bringing a coach back if this continues.
The football team has seemed to figure it out with Fran Brown. So when you look at the entire college landscape, you're covering this, you've covered college sports for many years, Brent. When you look at how teams are approaching hiring coaches, what is, from what you've seen, kind of like what they need to do? Is it the guy who's going to do the best in the portal? Is it the guy who just give me players and I'll coach them because I'm a coach? Like, how do you figure that out? And what have you seen?
Fran so far has been the consummate example of this sale because he showed receipts in both areas. So you hire Fran Brown, he gets Kyle McCord from Ohio State. Now, the cheat code there was Fran knew Kyle McCord. There were family connections back to the days. He called him Little League Kyle when he was watching Kyle McCord and Pop Warner football in seventh grade. They had an in. They had the money. They went all in on a quarterback, and it worked. And meanwhile, Fran Brown strings together a recruiting class that Syracuse had never seen. So he shows results before they get on the field, and then they come out and win 10 games this year. So now Fran Brown, at least it's only 1 year, and now you have to sustain it. And Syracuse has one of the hardest schedules in college football next year, so I'm going to be as fascinated as anybody to see if they can do it. He showed receipts. He showed an identity. His dart philosophy, he sent that message to fans, like, this is who we are, this is what we do, and we need you to be a part of it, right? So Fran came in and established an identity, which Autry, and I know this is not an apples-to-apples or oranges-to-oranges comparison, if you will, football to basketball, but he established an identity. He brought in a key player at the key position, which led to other players transferring in. You still have to recruit. Through all this stuff, Sal, you still have to recruit in college sports. And then he proved it on the field. So makes it look easy, right? So you have an example in the building of what can happen when you do get bold and make a move and spend a little money. And the people that were giving money to the program sale, not all of them, but a considerable amount of money came in from people that were hesitant to give it before, right? Because they were motivated. A spark was lit by doing something new. So now you got to go out and get money from people who may be what you said at the beginning of this conversation. They may be apathetic towards Syracuse basketball. So I don't care how much money you have. If you come to me and you want a considerable amount of money to invest in players and I'm apathetic about the program, I'm going to look at John Wildhack or whoever's asking me for this cash and say, why am I going to give you $2 million? Like, for what? Like, you're going to be very skeptical of this process. And it should be noted, Sal, that Syracuse in the last couple of weeks has actually hired two new people with a primary focus on fundraising and NIL focus and kind of the modern era we're in here, and there are transactions that aren't quite as sexy as, like, you know, a new coach, but at the very least John Wildhack sees what's happening and he's trying to address it as best as he can. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to go out and get the players. And I know this is not exactly the most encouraging conversation in a way. I'll say this. Okay, let's put a little hope out there. You know as well as I do, in basketball, it takes one dude. It takes one dude, and it can turn around the whole thing. So you just got to go find that guy. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, and then you also have some dudes who say, I just can't do this anymore. Jim Larrañaga, Tony Bennett. What's it been like watching and seeing this whole landscape for you? And, like, you know, you and I, we've watched basketball, Big East basketball. The coaches were always the thing. And, like, you know, it pains me to see this happening. And I don't want to be old man yelling at clouds, Brent.
Larinaga was the one that got me, Sal, because he walked away in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to stick it out. You got to ride your team out. But he was so disenchanted and worried, like, is there a health issue? And then once we figured out that it wasn't, it's like, come on, wow, this guy, like, how many times has he told his team in some way, shape, or form about commitment and loyalty? And you got to, and he can't even take it anymore. And he walks away in the middle of the season, right? To see the, and college basketball is unique in that way, Sal. It's the coaches that are the personalities.
Yep,
there are certainly players that come up, but because they come and go so quickly, it's the coaches that identify the product. And they're pretty much, with the exception of, you know, the Dan Hurleys and the Tom Izzos and a few guys left, they're all gone. So you have this younger generation of coaches coming up trying to establish themselves. And let's face it, they're not as, I mean, Hurley is an exception to the rule. He's a peach. But you don't get that old rivalry sense, you know, Boeheim versus Thompson and Lou Carnesecca. I mean, Rick Pitino's out there kicking ass again, which is great. But, man, that is fading out, unfortunately. And I like that you have those coaches that have personalities. Mick Cronin's another one, right? So maybe there's a few more that I'm thinking of. But the list is getting a lot shorter of those guys that identify the product.
Speaking of that, did you see the video of Danny Hurley last night?
I did.
Oh, my gosh. Talking about personalities. But here's a guy that knows how to do it, right? He checks all the boxes. He can recruit. He's got this great mentality. He can also coach. Like, I'm not worried about X's and O's. Like, if he doesn't have a great team, I know they're not as good this year, but they're still going to contend, you know, when it comes time for March, right? Like, that's the kind of guy. I mean, I know you can't just grab a Danny Hurley, but that's what I mean. Like, am I looking for a guy who can just recruit the portal and be the greatest personality? Am I looking for a guy that has just give me the players and I'll coach them? That's what's so tough. But, man, you look at a guy like that, I mean, that's the kind of personality. That resonates now.
And it works in college. Like, can you imagine Dan Hurley doing that with Luka Doncic and LeBron James? Like, the Lakers wanted him. He could be coaching the Lakers right now, but that stuff doesn't fly at that league. It certainly does in college. Put his ring finger and tell a fan in the stands, I got two rings, Baldy. Like,
oh, my God.
You can't help but laugh. But it's the fine line of competitiveness and just being obnoxious. And he straddles that. I've never seen a coach that can't handle adrenaline more than Dan Hurley. Like, that guy gets so wired. And I can't imagine, I mean, that man must not sleep from October to April because he's just got so much adrenaline pumping through his veins.
You excited for the Four Nations face-off? I know you're a hockey guy. Pretty cool stuff going on this week.
Yeah, that's unique, right? Let's do something different. Let's mix it up a little bit. You know, Olympic hockey is as good as it gets, so why not try something like this? Why not try to get a World Baseball Classic type of feel in the middle of the season? And I mean, it just goes to show you that our attention spans are waning, and you got to kind of throw these things, like the NBA does it with the NBA Cup, and every sport seems to have to, like, startle us in the middle of the season to remind us that they're still there. But I'm all for it. Let's try something different.
Hey, buddy, thanks. Thanks for this. Great to catch up. We'll do it again sometime. I appreciate it. I'll still be here, and I'll be there when they do it right and become Syracuse basketball again the way I've known them. But I fear that we're here for a while because I just don't know the path right now.
Thanks for having me, Sal. Plenty of seats available at the Dome if you want to come down. But, yeah, hopefully they put a spark in this thing one way or the other in the near future.
You got it, buddy. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you joining me today. Brent Axe right there, Syracuse.com. And Brent does a great show as well. You can always check him out on Twitter and follow his show and follow his work. We'll take a timeout here. When we come back, we'll take a short break, and then it will be Paul Hamilton at the top of the hour. Four Nations Faceoff and the NHL trade deadline approaching as well. All right, we got to get right back to a break here because we went a little long. Brent Axe, great discussion, though. Check that out. Always on demand, WGR550.com and in the Odyssey app. But our guy Paul Hamilton joins me after this timeout. The Four Nations Faceoff starts tonight. Canada, Sweden tonight, Finland, and the United States also, obviously, in the Four Nations Faceoff tournament, I guess we'll call it. And, of course, The NHL trade deadline coming up on March 7th. Paul Hamilton next on the way on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Keeping the train rolling here on a Wednesday. Good morning to you. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio. And last night, my wife and I decided because after Syracuse lost to Miami, which was ridiculous, I'm like, you know what? I want to watch this Saturday Night Live thing. Have you, Josh, seen the new SNL 50 stuff that's going on?
I've been seeing bits of it on social media, but never anything like, you know, the whole episodes or anything like that.
Okay, so there's all these documentaries. One of them is like, it's like 2.5 hours long, but most of it's about like the music. So turn it on. Oh my God, it was amazing. And I still like have a bunch left to watch. I'm thinking about halfway through at least. But wow, unbelievable. In the very beginning, I'm just letting everybody know, go watch the beginning, just how they put all these different, like it's a collective of music and together. And it's like being at a club and just the beat keeps going on. It's unbelievable. And it's really cool. And it really brought me back to a cool time watching Saturday Night Live. Very cool. I can't wait to watch the rest of it. And there's a whole other bunch of documentaries and parts of this whole thing going on with SNL 50. Paul Hamilton joins me on the Western Hotline right now. Were you a Saturday Night Live guy? Have you been your whole life?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it's the same thing you're watching. They had a 3-hour special on all the music.
I saw it when it was on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome.
And then
I was thinking, some I'm going to fast forward through and everything, and I didn't. You know, I watched the whole thing.
It was great, and they go through all the different musical acts, how they started, what they meant, the different genres, like the impact that the musical acts had back in the time period in the 70s and the 80s. And then, of course, some of the funniest ones, the best parts were the skits, right, and the music that went with the skits. Mm-hmm. And how those were created, and Justin Timberlake, whoever it was, very, very cool. But I liked it. Have you been a guy that's like kind of like sat down and watched Saturday Night Live when you had a chance? And some of the actors over the years, did you lose touch with it over a certain time period? Was it been a big part of your life?
I've kind of lost touch with it now. I don't watch it all that often now, but yeah, that was a part of my life growing up. As I got a little older, you know. In high school, we weren't usually home on Saturday night, but if you could watch it, you did. And what I didn't realize listening to a lot of the musical acts is what a prestige thing it was to be asked to be on that as a musical guest. I didn't realize, I knew it was like a big deal, but I didn't realize it was as big a deal as the top music acts thought it was to be asked to be on there.
Yeah, you're right about that, and I still got some to go on this. Very cool, though. Anyway, if you get a chance, check it out. There's a lot of SNL 50, the anniversary this season this year is going on, so there's a lot of the documentary stuff and about how a lot of this stuff was made. I see there's another one about auditions I need to get to. I really want to watch that as well. In the meantime, it's a good time to watch some of this stuff because there's not a lot of hockey on, but we do have some tonight. It's the Four Nations face-off. It begins tonight in Montreal at the Bell Center. It's going to be Canada against Sweden tonight. All right, Paul, I think the biggest question here from a lot of people and really from me is, what will this look like? Because you have these players in this sport who very much play for pride for their country. It's, I think, soccer and hockey are above any other sport like that. And they're going to really want to win for their country when they put that sweater on. They're also in the middle of a season for their professional NHL team when many of them are trying to win a Stanley Cup. I'm just wondering how this looks, how intense it is, what it's going to look like tonight. What do you think?
I think it's going to be very intense. Now, the things that I've seen, you know, the Canada Cups and a lot of the things I've covered over the years are that iconic goal by Mario Lemieux in Hamilton in 1987 when he's playing a line with Gretzky. Yeah, Gretzky and Lemieux on the same line. Good luck. And I've never been in a building that has gone off like that did when Lemieux scored that goal. And Gretzky got the assist. I have never been in anything like that. It was just crazy what that was like. And then outside the arena, it was like, you know, the most wild World Series party, or the most wild Super Bowl or whatever. Fans don't go as wild as they used to, you know, after championships. It was just great hockey, but that was in August. It was before training camp. It wasn't during the season. Now, Mike Ramsey played, I think it might have been called Rendezvous, if I'm not mistaken. It was the NHL All-Stars, and he made that team. He was one of the top six defensemen chosen for that team, and it was like the best of three. That was during the All-Star break. I think you're right. It does make it a little different than when you go to training camp early and do it in, you know, before the season starts, as opposed to, you know, doing it here during. But I think it's going to be great. I mean, Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby are on the same team. You know, it's just mind-blowing. And then you got Makar on defense, you know, for Team Canada. You know, Nate MacKinnon, Sam Reinhart, Mitch Marner. I mean, just it's crazy. I'm looking at the lineup. The only thing Canada doesn't have is goaltending. And it may kill them, because they definitely have the best team, I think, as far as forwards and defense. But they have, I think, probably the worst goaltending.
What about the United States? Where do you see they are strong, and where do you think they lack a little bit, if anywhere?
Well, the United States, I think, is strong, yes, without question. The thing with them is, you know, they do have much better goaltending, I think, without question. You know, you got Jack Eichel. Austin Matthews was their captain. I mean, to have them on the same team down the middle is phenomenal. But I think the biggest thing that maybe could put them ahead of Canada is, you know, you got Connor Hellebuyck in goal. You basically have the best goaltender in the National Hockey League, you know, for Team USA, which I think, does that put them ahead of Canada? I think that's the question. You know, Team USA certainly can put a great hockey team on the ice, but I don't think they quite have the stars that Canada has. I mean, you have both the Chooks, you have Matthews, you have a guy like Gensel who scores a lot of goals. But then, you know, and Larkin's a good player. But you also have guys like Nelson and Trocheck and JT Miller, and not that they're not good players. On defense, Slavin's a good defenseman. There's no question. But, you know, the defense that Team USA puts out can't compare to the defense that Team Canada does. But when you have Hellebuyck and Ottinger on goal, compared to what Canada has, which is Binnington of the St. Louis Blues, Aiden Hill has won a Stanley. They both have won Stanley Cups. I will give them that. But I would take Hellebuyck over either one of those guys any day.
Canada, Sweden tonight at 8 p.m. United States, Finland tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And then on Saturday, it really gets real. Finland, Sweden at 1. United States and Canada play at 8 p.m. Saturday night. That's going to be really fun as they wrap up the first part all at the Bell Center in Montreal. Speaking of Sweden, obviously, that's where you see, Rasmus Dahlin playing for the Buffalo Sabres. He'll be on a pretty stacked blue line, I think. You look at the defense core for Sweden. Rasmus Andersson, Brodin, Dahlin, Ekholm. I mean, Victor Hedman, Erik Karlsson. That might be the best blue line team.
Well, what I saw is that Dahlin on the third pair, whether that winds up being that way, I don't know, with Andersson. Karlsson, to me, is... He's a phenomenal offensive defenseman. Maybe not as much now. He's 34 years old as he used to be. And he is a god-awful defensive defenseman. Just awful. He's on their second pair with Ekholm. And as much as I don't think Dahlin has reached his potential, he's still very good in the National Hockey League as an all-star. I don't think Erik Karlsson can hold Dahlin's jockstrap as an overall defenseman. Just as an overall guy, I'll take Rasmus Dahlin defending over Karlsson any day of the week. I would take Rasmus Dahlin injured over Karlsson defending. So it's interesting, and Dahlin is also not on either power play unit, but you know, that kind of checks out because, you know, at a lot of the time this year, not all the time, but a lot of the time, the Sabres power play has struggled, especially last year, and he's been a big part of that. But he right now is not on Sweden's power play.
For Finland, Henry Jokiharju will be playing for the Buffalo Sabres. He was added as an injury replacement, but he's on the team. And then Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, is he going to be the main starter for this team? They also have Lankinen and Saros.
Saros is the starter. Yeah, he'll back up Saros, which is right. Even if Luukkonen was playing as well as he did last year, I think Saros is still the number one goaltender in Finland. Whether he gets a game or not, you know, being such a short tournament, I'm not sure that he will unless there's an injury. But just that's an honor for him because Finland's always been kind of a big thing for goaltenders. And for him to be able to make that team and be on that team, I think, is a good honor for him. The thing about Finland is there's not that many Finnish defensemen in the National Hockey League.
No.
And I think three of them had to get out because of injury, which put Jokiharju in there. So they're really hurting on the blue line as far as that goes. But, again, Saros can get hot. He's quite capable of getting hot. And when he is, he's tough to beat.
Paul Hamilton on the West Hur hotline. Paul, what's been any sort of reaction of Sabres who didn't make it, like Tage Thompson specifically or anybody else?
He was very disappointed, and I don't blame him. I mean, when the team was picked, he had 15 goals. Cole Caulfield had 17. Neither one of them were picked for the team, which I thought, really? Come on. And I know you have to pick a team. You know, you can't just have goal scorers and that type of thing. But really, you're going to take Nelson and Trocheck over Tage Thompson and Caulfield? Come on. You know, I just those are the two that I just shook my head and said, come on, what are you guys doing? And, but, you know, in Trocheck's case, Chris Drury is part of the management team that picked this team. You got Boldy from Minnesota, part of the management that picked this team, Team USA's GM. So Faber, he's Minnesota too, but Faber's a very good defenseman. I don't think that's a bad choice for defense. But when we're talking about, you know, a guy like Tage Thompson and Caulfield, and you don't take the top two goal scorers for Team USA, I just kind of shook my head. Now Matthews has been hurt for most of the year, so he's not up there in the top goal scorers because of injury. And of course, the Tkachuks and Eichel. Connor's got 30 goals. He's always disrespected. Nobody wants to talk about Connor, but he always, by the end, has scored goals. And I'll give you a quick example. I'm in a goal-scoring pool. Connor scores goals every single year. He was the 18th overall pick, and he's got 30. I mean, it's just like nobody wants this guy, but all he does is score goals. You know, and now he's going to play with Eichel and Tkachuk to start with, or at least he did in practice. And that's where he belongs. At least Team USA values him.
All right, Paul, let's turn our attention back to, you know, the games in the league. And the league trade deadline is March 7th. I mean, from your sense, are the Sabres in a mode to just say, look, we're not going to make it again, so we're going to sell off some parts here and see what we can do with some draft picks? Do you think there's a big move coming that they could still be shopping someone? Is it possible that they still think that they could climb back in this thing and look to add a piece?
No, but I'd be looking for the middle stat for Bo Byram trade, which happened around March time. It's always been, it's hard to make hockey trades at the trade deadline, but they've already been made. Some trades have already been made. That's what I think the Sabres, they don't need draft picks. They don't need any of that stuff. That I don't see there's any point in trading Zucker, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, or Greenway. Those are the types of players they need. They need more of guys like that, veteran guys who can play and can lead. They don't need to subtract them for draft picks. Kevin Adams was on our station saying he's already contacted the agents of Zucker to try to maybe get a deal done before the trade deadline. And I think that's the right thing to do. You know, get this guy signed to a two-year contract. I wouldn't give him too much more than that. I mean, he is getting up there in years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's reasonable to maybe offer him a good 2-year contract and keep him around, because I think, you know, he's been an excellent signing for the Sabres. Greenway, one of the best penalty killers in the NHL. He's one of the few physical forwards that you have. I have never seen a player on the Sabres that makes maybe Tuck is semi-similar, but Greenway that makes teams turn the puck over. He it's almost like he knows where the guy's going to go with the puck before they do, and it creates scoring opportunities for his line mates. So he would be another one that I would be trying to sign, not trade, at the trade deadline.
I'm taking a look at the UFAs here. It really is Greenway, Zucker. Who am I listening here? Yoki Haru, Dennis
Gilbert. I think he might be gone. You know, he hasn't played a lot. He's been benched somewhat, and I don't think he'd be unhappy. He has not asked for a trade that I know of, at least. It has not come out publicly, but I don't think he would be too disappointed either if he moved on. I think the Sabres offering him a 1-year contract kind of told him where he is in the organization. So that might be a deal that you could see for a draft pick or whatever at the trade deadline.
What about I had something in front of my mind, and injuries, Paul. Greenway, where he is, and anybody else that we're monitoring here over this week.
He should be back for the first game against the Rangers. Lindy Ruff said, you know what? They put him on a program with the doctors and everything that targeted that game. He said, if we really needed this game coming up, like let's say it was a playoff game or something like that, he could have played in Nashville probably. But they didn't want to go against the protocols that were being suggested there just to throw him into one game early. They said, let's keep doing with the program that they had decided to do. He's been going hard in practice, and then he should be ready for that first game coming back against the Rangers.
I mean, I don't mean to sound flippant when I say this, but don't you kind of need every game right now? And I get it. Like, I get it. If you put him in there, the benefit is you get a whole other 2 weeks. So I'm totally down with that, but what's the end game?
I think you have to be realistic. It's not like they're not trying to win. They are trying to win, and actually they'd run 5 out of 7. I think you have to be honest with yourself too. You're not leapfrogging 8 teams and coming back from 12 points down while you are leapfrogging 8 teams. So is it wise to bring him back, and if there's any risk whatsoever? You know, if they were 4 points out, your point is well taken. Wait a minute. We need to get him in there as quickly as we can, because we need every point we can get right now. I think, being realistic, I probably would have done the same thing if I were them.
Paul, what do you think about the situation in Boston? I know they're chanting fire Sweeney at TD Garden. They're kind of in this spot where they're trying to decide if they should be buyers or sellers. Where do you think they are in their kind of organizational build right now?
Yeah, that was a team when, the beginning of the year when we thought the Sabres would have a chance to make the playoffs that you kind of targeted as well. That's a team you can probably get past. Because it just seems like, they had lost Bergeron to retirement, and, they still have some good players. McAvoy's a very good player. Marchand's a very good player. Both are going to be in this tournament. Swayman is capable of being a good goaltender. Hasn't been this year since he signed his contract, but he's capable of that. But you got other guys who've kind of stepped in, like a Geeky and others. So they're already kind of making that transition. But I don't think they're going to give up on the playoffs right now. So I don't know how much of a buyer they'll be, but also they might just be a team that might be willing to stand pat unless something really comes their way that they like.
And then the other team I want to ask you about is the Sabres' next opponent, the Rangers. They come to town next Saturday. Next Saturday when the Sabres get back on the ice against the Rangers. That's a, 5:30 p.m. start? I think it's a weird time here. 5:30 p.m. faceoff on Saturday next week. But the Rangers, maybe a bit of a step back, maybe a bit of a disappointment. They make the trade for JT Miller. What do you think about the situation there and where they are right now?
Well, they obviously aren't packing it in by getting JT Miller, to acquire that. So they're still going for it. They still, Zibanejad has underperformed this year. Trocheck just is starting to play a little bit better for them. Shesterkin is out with an injury. He's been off and on. There have been times he's been himself. There are times, including against the Sabres, where he hasn't been himself. So I think that's hurt them too. And so, you know, they have guys, even Panarin, you know, he only has 23 goals, and I say only, but for him, that's not a lot. Chris Kreider only has 16 goals. But Chris Kreider is getting up there in age too, you know? And that's a guy that, you know, you look at it, and when does it finally cut off? You know, when he's been a 30-goal scorer recently and had some of his better scoring years later in his career, but he's getting long in the tooth too. But I think they've told us by acquiring a 31-year-old JT Miller at $8 million that they're not giving up on it yet.
Paul Hamilton. All right, Paul, well, enjoy the Four Nations face-off. And then are there restrictions on the – you know how they do the whole thing where remember they had the off days a few weeks, like a month ago, and then the Blackhawks waited to fly at midnight or something to come to Buffalo. Is that the same thing that happens after this sort of thing?
No. You know what I mean? Like, no, this is different.
How does this work?
This is just business as usual. There's no roster freeze.
Okay.
They're not coming out of the Christmas break. That was the Christmas break you were talking about.
That was it.
Right. And the tournament will be over, too. I mean, the Sabres actually be practicing before the tournament. Their first practice is Tuesday, the 18th.
Okay.
And then they play on Saturday. But some of the guys, if you make it to the finals, they still won't be available to their teams yet. But teams at least can get players back and get them practicing again and that type of thing. But, no, they haven't frozen rosters or have any restrictions. It's, you know, you can practice, I think, at 2 o'clock on Tuesday. And Lindy Ruff will, and I'm sure other teams will, and they'll start getting ready for the rest of the season.
Good information. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Paul. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I got Sal to cook for me yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, it's really a Yana Capaccio creation, but I helped a little bit with some of the things inside the potato soup. Did you like the potato soup she made?
I did. I liked it. There were some really good soups there. It's funny because, you know, I don't get to the station all that often, but when they said they were going to have a soup thing, I'm coming. I'm in.
I get it.
Soup and chili and... You had to take the little cups, though. You can't be filling up on one because we're judging, so you have to be able to taste them all. I believe a chicken wing soup was the winner. But there was some really good stuff there. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, Christine and our account exec, the chicken wing soup she made was terrific. And Paul, I'm the same way as you, which is, you want me to come in? Tell me you're feeding me, and then I'll come in. Then I'll be at studio. I'll leave Studio Capaccio to go to Odyssey. Thanks a lot.
I've lost a lot of weight lately, so I don't eat anywhere near as much as I used to. But and then I got a little tub of soup to take home, so I had it for dinner too.
Nice, you got it, buddy. All right, have a great rest of your week.
Take care.
All right, you got it, Paul's. Appearance here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show is brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide by Relax Honda. Honda, relax. We got this. Okay, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, I've teased it. I've talked about it. I have in my hand. List. Hear that paper? I want to unveil it. My 1-7 best 1, worst 7 NFL head coaching hires based on what the team actually needed. Doesn't mean they'll be the most successful or the least successful, but what did you need, and did you get what you needed? 1-7, we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. So we've had 7 NFL head coaches hired this year. All teams now have a head coach. There's no more vacancies. That was the final one was filled yesterday with the Saints hiring of Kellen Moore. So the teams, in whatever order I have listed here, I'll just read the teams. I'm going to here. If you go to Wikipedia and like look at all the NFL head coaches and you sort by year hired, here's the order they're listed that were this year. Bears just hired Ben Johnson. Dallas Cowboys of Brian Schottenheimer. Jacksonville Jaguars with Liam Cohen. Las Vegas Raiders Pete Carroll. New England Patriots, Mike Vrabel. New Orleans Saints, Kellen Moore. And, where's Aaron Glenn? How come they don't have Aaron Glenn on here? Did they miss this? Well, what do they have for the Jets here? This is kind of funny. I'm actually going through the... if you go to Wikipedia... Josh, you go to Wikipedia and you sort by a year hired. I don't even think, who do they have listed? They even have a Jets coach listed here? Let me see. It's kind of funny. They're HJ. I'm going to go through the alphabetical order. It is, does say 2025, but I just don't see him listed on there. Oh, they put him in the, they put it in the wrong little column there. That's why. It says coach 225. It does not say, it's so funny. Look at the Jets. You can never do anything right with the Jets, right? Go to Wikipedia. If you type in NFL head coaches and go to the Wikipedia page, for New York Jets, they actually put in the wrong box. Instead of Coach Aaron Glenn hired 2025, it says Coach 2025, like it's the person's name is 2025. Pretty funny, actually. That's why I was a little screwed up. Let me give you, though, the point is my rankings 1 through 7 on these teams and how well they did hiring the head coach for what they basically needed. I want to reiterate, this does not mean, or my prediction of how well and or terrible any of these coaches will do. They may have hit a home run for what they needed, but it doesn't matter because of other circumstances, the coach just does not do well. They may have not really got something they needed, but then all of a sudden the coach does great. Then obviously I think I'm probably wrong in that regard. Let's start at the top. I have the New England Patriots hiring Mike Vrabel as number one. You know why? The Patriots just needed a leader of an organization and a guy who knows how to win in the National Football League. Mike Vrabel knows how to win in the NFL. He has not had great seasons necessarily in the NFL as a head coach with the Tennessee Titans, but he's had good seasons. In fact, remember, he even beat the New England Patriots in the playoffs. He's also a part of their organization, their culture, the Patriot way. Whatever you think about that or it means, he will bring a much, much needed type of stability to that position after going with Gerard Mayo for a year. Mike Vrabel to the New England Patriots always made the most sense. It's what they should have done, quite frankly, last year, but because they had given Gerard Mayo in his contract and said he is the successor to Bill Belichick, they went that direction. But once Mike Vrabel was available, it just made the most sense that Mike Vrabel should be the head coach of the New England Patriots. That's what they needed. They needed a leader of their organization, someone to start leading them again in this new era post-Bill Belichick. They got it in Mike Vrabel, so that's number one. Number two, you know what the Chicago Bears needed? An exciting offensive mind. And they got one in Ben Johnson. Now, I don't know. I have my reservations and thoughts about whether or not Ben Johnson's going to be a great leader, CEO type of coach. I don't know. You could be a great play caller. You could be a great designer of offense. You could be a great position coach. You could be a great coordinator. It really doesn't have always translate to being a great head coach. I don't know. But you know what they needed? They needed to get away from what they just had, which just was a, seemed like kind of a more boring defensive personality. Matt Eberflus, a lot of, you know, Matt Nagy didn't have the greatest personality. This is a guy, bring some pizzazz. They need that. And, oh, by the way, I even went all this time without mentioning, they have Caleb Williams, who can be really good in this league, I think. I don't know how good he's going to be. Maybe he never reaches the status a lot of people thought he would, number one overall pick, whatever. But they needed a guy like Ben Johnson. They needed a young, fresh, an exciting offensive mind. And they got one in Ben Johnson. So I'm going to put the Bears at number two. At number three, I debated this. I went back and forth on a few of these, okay? But I ultimately settled on the Las Vegas Raiders and what they needed by hiring Pete Carroll as their head coach. You know why? I think at the end of the day, now, Pete Carroll is in his 70s. He is the oldest hired, like, first time, not make first time ever, like, an organization hiring a head coach. He's 73 years old. No team has ever hired a coach to be their new coach at an older age. But I'm going to say this about Pete Carroll. Holy cow, I hope that I look as good as Pete Carroll does when I'm 73. Like, that dude's 21 years older than me. I mean, and he looks 22, and he looks great. And he still has a sharp mind. And I love that. And no part of the sharp mind, though, mostly is from the defensive side of the ball. And look what he did in Seattle. And the reason why I put them number three here, the Vegas Raiders, is because look at the division they're in. Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. Justin Herbert, obviously, with the Chargers. And then, of course, Bo Nix and what he did with Sean Payton. They don't have a quarterback. They have to figure out the quarterback. So they needed someone who could at least come in, knows defense, knows how to coach defense, and actually has won. He's a Super Bowl winning coach. I think they got what they needed here. I don't love the fact that you're hiring a 73-year-old coach, but if you're going to hire a 73-year-old coach, make it a guy like Pete Carroll, who looks really good for his age and looks like he can still run out there and do everything on a daily basis and a daily grind. So I'm going to give the Las Vegas Raiders number three here with what they got in Pete Carroll. And I would have done that a few weeks ago, by the way, until I really looked at it and said, you know what? I think they did a good job here. All right, number four. I don't know how it's going to turn out. It's always probably, for them, going to be not good as compared to how great it could be. But the Jets needed a culture changer, and they got one in Aaron Glenn. I mean, you think about the New York Jets and the coaches they've had over the years. Last time the Jets went out and got a culture changer, it was Rex Ryan, believe it or not. And he took them to two straight AFC Championship games. There's a thing about changing culture, though. Sometimes that culture just wears off, and it doesn't work in the long run. And that's kind of what happened with Rex Ryan. Happened a little bit in Buffalo in some respect as well. But Aaron Glenn is a culture changer. I love his no-nonsense approach. He's a member of that organization. He played for them. He's gonna be somebody who really, really believes and stands up for what he believes in. The problem Aaron Glenn is going to have is the problem that any New York Jets coach has, no matter how good or bad that coach is, and that's going to be they have an owner that's going to be stepping in the way all the time, right? And Woody Johnson. I don't know if he can overcome that. I don't know if Aaron Glenn's going to be a really good head coach for the Jets. My guess is it's not going to work out in the end, because until I see proof of any coach going to New York and it working out, I'm just going to err on that side. But I will say, for number four here, because I think it can go either way, but the thing I don't like about the Jets, the only thing I don't like about the Jets hire here is I do think that they may have been better served getting a guy who's been a head coach in this league. That is not Aaron Glenn. I think they needed somebody who might have had a little bit more stability, who's been down that road, who know to dealing with the owner, right? Dealing with the GM, a new GM, all these things that go along with the New York media. I think that matters. That's not Aaron Glenn. But they do need a culture changer. So that's why I'm putting him four, which is they didn't get a previous head coach. I think they could have really used one here. But they did get a guy that's going to change the culture, which is good for them. So I'm going to put him right smack dab in the middle here at number four. Then I'm going to go to number five. And honestly, this could be number seven and the worst one for me. But the other two are just so down the road, down the chart that I didn't do it. I don't even know what the Jacksonville Jaguars need. But they hired Liam Cohen. And he seems like he's a really bright offensive mind. I just don't know. I'm watching the press conferences. I'm thinking about he hasn't been a head coach before. I don't love this hire, but who knows? I like the fact that they have Trevor Lawrence and, you know, they have some good offensive pieces, and they're bringing in a guy who can elevate that offense, which is, I think, what they needed mostly here, right, coming in. A guy that is going to come in from another organization with fresh eyes, fresh perspective. So we'll see. I don't love the hire of Liam Cohen. I just don't know what they needed. It's a mystery to me, because that's kind of an organization that's been wandering in the wilderness for a while, trying to figure it all out, and it hasn't really gone right. Now, number six, what the New Orleans Saints needed was probably something just a little bit different and fresh, and they did okay here. Maybe I could have put Kellen Moore above Liam Cohen, but I'm going to put Kellen Moore at number six here, because I think with the Saints and their cap situation, maybe they needed somebody who could come in and, you know, kind of stabilize that whole environment, make sure that they could still stay competitive. I don't know. Here's the reason why I don't love the Kellen Moore hire, I guess. Here's the biggest reason for New Orleans. I don't know how long he's going to get. Like, maybe you needed a bridge. That's basically the best way I'd say it. Maybe you needed a bridge here more than anything for the New Orleans Saints. That's not Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore is, you're starting fresh from the bottom. You're going to build this thing up. And from that, maybe he's going to be really good. But I think they need more of a bridge than what they got in Kellen Moore here, who you're taking a guy, first-time head coach. Where are you supporting him with what you're doing here and how you're going to tear this thing down, because you have salary cap implications and all of that. So I don't love it necessarily. We'll see where it goes. I could have put him number five and then Liam Cohen number six. And then clearly number seven, the last one on this list. You know what the Dallas Cowboys needed? Respect. You know what they don't get from this hire with Brian Schottenheimer, to be quite honest with you? Respect. And I'm not saying that Brian Schottenheimer can't be a respectable dude. I'm saying, how do you, as the Dallas Cowboys, hire Brian Schottenheimer as your next head coach coming off what you've had over the last several years? This is all a Jerry Jones production. We know that. Brian Schottenheimer does not instantly bring respect and credibility back to the Dallas Cowboys, which is what they needed the most here. They didn't need an X's and O's guy for offense or defense. They needed respectability. They're not getting it with hiring Brian Schottenheimer as their next head coach. I mean, it's a guy that was, look at his titles over the years. He was a coordinator in Dallas, a coaching analyst in Dallas, a passing game coordinator in Jacksonville. He was a coordinator under Pete Carroll in Seattle, a quarterback for a few years, quarterbacks coach. I mean, this does not move the needle for me at all. It is not at all what the Cowboys needed, but what they think they needed is a puppet for Jerry Jones. So I guess they got what they wanted from there. For me, not what was needed for the Dallas Cowboys, respectability. So there it is. My top seven as far as coaching hires. I probably ranked Kellen Moore a little bit too low, but I'll keep him there for now because, I don't know, maybe Liam Cohen's exactly what the Jacksonville Jaguars needed. Number one, the Patriots and Mike Vrabel. Number two, the Bears and Ben Johnson. Number three, the Las Vegas Raiders and Pete Carroll. Number four, the New York Jets and Aaron Glenn. Number five, the Jaguars and Liam Cohen. And number six, the Saints and Kellen Moore. And number seven, the Cowboys with Brian Schottenheimer. Those are the my rankings as far as how well each team did on what they need for their next head coach. Yeah, the Saints are in a weird spot, right? They're this team that's always kind of up against the cap, stripping the cap, like pushing all their money down the road. And the reason why I put Moore down, because I keep thinking about it, looking at it, like, did I rank him too low, is I think Kellen Moore is the kind of guy that when you know, like, we're starting over, maybe they are. Maybe they're finally saying, we're just going to start over. But they still have some older guys on the books. They have to figure out what they're doing contract-wise. I think they needed more of a bridge guy there. I have no idea what the Jags need. No idea. So, good luck, Liam Cohen. Maybe he's exactly what they need. Maybe it's going to be a disaster like it has been in Jacksonville with other teams. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Wednesday Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show after this timeout on WGR. You know, we've gone this whole show today and have not talked about the Bills' reported hiring of a new special teams coordinator. So the Bills, it came out yesterday, have reportedly hired, or are hiring, whatever the process would be here, Chris Tabor as their new special teams coordinator. And what stands out about Chris Tabor to me is this is a guy who has been a coordinator in this league for 13 years. And why that's significant is he's taking over a position that the last two coordinators were both first-timers. You go back to Heath Farwell. Now, when Sean McDermott got the Bills' job in 2017... he had Danny Crossman on staff, and he retained Danny Crossman on staff for a couple of years. And then it was, what, 1 year or 2 year? I can't remember. I have to go back and look. But anyway, then Heath Farwell came in. He hired Heath Farwell away from, he had been a assistant special teams coach in Seattle. Young guy, rising up, and he became a first-time coordinator. Then, and Matthew Smiley had been here. By the way, Matthew Smiley had worked under McDermott as an assistant special teams coach with both Crossman and then Farwell. And then Farwell was let go, obviously, after the 21 season. And Smiley was elevated to the role, becoming another first-time coordinator. So you had Heath Farwell, first-time coordinator. Matthew Smiley, first-time coordinator. Both of them now, they moved on from. And the new coordinator, Chris Tabor, totally different approach. This is a guy who's been in the NFL for 13 years. Now, he actually wasn't in the NFL last year. But I put together a chart. You can find it at Sal Sports on Twitter/X. And I basically just put together his coverage rankings and his return rankings, coverage, kickoff coverage and return, punt coverage and return, and highlighted, you know, top half of the league, bottom half. And a lot of this is just, it's so randomly impacted. But you can just see. But what's striking to me as you take a look, he started with the Browns in 2011. He was with the Browns for 8 years as a coordinator, 2011 through 2017, and then the Bears for 4 years, and then the Panthers for 2 years before not being a part of an NFL team last year, not coaching last year. So 13 years as a coordinator in the NFL. And the other part of it is He's twice been an interim head coach with the Bears and then with the Panthers in different times. And the reason why that's important is I think that when you surround yourself and you hire people on your staff who had experience as, if it's a coordinator and then he becomes a position coach for you, but he had coordinator experience, or a head coach comes and coaches anything, a position group, a coordinator, whatever, those people understand the dynamic of the whole team way better than just someone coming up as a position coach. So I'm assuming that's part of the reason why Sean McDermott made this move as well. But the Bills haven't confirmed that, but we'll get that, I'm sure, coming up, and then the Combine in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, Sabres Live up next, then One Bills Live, show up with the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.